Okay, but back to Zambonis though. How hard do you think it would be to drive those? I really want to do
Honestly,
it.
like, I feel like they're pretty cumbersome. Like, there's a reason they, like,
Yeah,
seem
and
such
the
wide
turns are
turns.
so wide.
Do you guys remember that movie with, what was her
The
name?
duck one? Mighty
Michelle
Ducks?
Trachtenberg? Where she, no, not Mighty Ducks. Yes, everyone knows Mighty Ducks. The one with Michelle Trachtenberg, it's like Ice Princess, where they drive the Zamboni onto a frozen pond.
I love Ice Princess.
No. It's so unrealistic,
and then
though.
She, like,
can you
break.
Drive a Zamboni onto a pond?
But you would break the ice. There's no way that thing is. I don't even know how much they
it's
weigh.
Set in like.
Are you talking about Ice Princess?
Yes.
What, were you, are you paying attention?
I'm sorry, no.
Hello, it's Wednesday, April 12th, and Haley, Molly, and Susanna join me again today for another episode of Play Like a Girl. We'll be discussing lawsuits, lots of NFL lawsuits, as well as some important UW sports news. And as always, the schedule of the week's sporting events. So this week at home, not many teams are hosting events, probably because of the Easter weekend, but baseball welcomes Oregon State, the number one team in the Pac-12. Three-game series starts on Thursday. I'll be there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, as well as men's tennis is going to host Stanford and Cal Friday and Sunday. For those previews and recaps, you can, of course, go to dailyudub.com/sports. Competing away from Montlake, the highlight of our sports world is the gymnastics team going to the NCAA championships. Well, preparing, trying to get into the championships. Yeah. And with that, Haley, the beat writer, interviewed head coach Elise Ray, and she gives her thoughts on being a athlete who's been to the NCAA championships as well as now a head coach.
We're super excited. It's a huge deal for us. But it's also really normal. Like, we're just training like it's another meet, and the girls have had a great week of practice. But there's a lot of excitement, a lot of energy around it for sure. And we plan on just going out there and competing like we've competed all season. So, and maybe surprising some people. So, we're pumped.
For live updates, you can follow at UW Daily Sports, and we retweet and post tweets from the beat writer, so you can also follow along with their live tweeting. So in UW sports news, football head coach Chris Peterson had his contract extended through 2023 and is slated to make $34.125 million. So with that, he will earn $4.12 million in the 2017 season, which is believed to be the highest salary of any Pac-12 coach. And in his final year of the contract, he will be cashing a check for $5.62 million. Haley, you were saying that he was unofficially the highest paid coach due to bonuses?
Yeah. Technically, the Wazoo coach makes more, but like salary-wise, but Chris Peterson has achieved more bonuses just because of the team's performance.
Yeah, and this, it's stated in his contract that he has the opportunity to make up to $1,050,000 in additional performance bonuses each year through 2023. So that's some football news for you folks.
Stacks on stacks on stacks.
Yep, cashing those big checks.
A bunch of other assistant coaches got raises, too.
True, yeah. The Coach K is now the highest paid assistant coach.
In program history.
In program history. So kudos. Hopefully that translates into another good season. Who knows? But Haley, you're in my defense. Starts our lawsuits discussion. So tell us about this first NFL lawsuit we'll be talking about.
So first of all, this guy, Jerry Wunsch, he used to play for the Seahawks and before that the Buccaneers, I believe. So he sued the Seahawks for workers' compensation and because of his injuries sustained while playing for the Seahawks, and he was granted that. But he's also part of a lawsuit with 13 plaintiffs against all 32 teams in the NFL that are basically saying that they, I think the word was, administered abusive levels of prescription drugs to players in order to keep them on the field and basically forcing them to play while injured, which could have caused them to sustain greater injuries, The side effects of the drugs that were administered could also, like, cause other health problems, and it also caused a lot of prescription drug addiction among NFL players.
Yeah, and you wrote something in your column. You reference an article that you wrote last year in December about players playing through pain just for the love of the game, but this is clearly, like, a whole different scenario, because he states that he wasn't even aware of some of the side effects, that they were giving him super high doses that he wasn't aware of. I think they said, like, on the log sheet it said it was 30 milligrams and he was really getting 60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you also talked a little bit about overdose and painkiller addiction in professional sports. You mentioned specifically Marek Svatos, the Colorado Avalanche forward, or former Colorado Avalanche forward, who overdosed on morphine and anti-anxiety medication in December, and then the New York Rangers, Derek Bogard, who overdosed on oxycodone and revealed that he had his autopsy revealed he had a significant brain injury that was likely an example or a result of his time in the NHL. So I think this is something that happens across leagues. I think anytime you're monetizing people's bodily performance and athletic performance, the lines get blurred between what is for profit and what is for, like, health. Or I guess a better way to say that would be, like, sometimes the health of the players is overlooked in the interest of profit and things like that. And I know this is slightly different, but just, like, another example of a league not really respecting, like, players' well-being is there's currently been a lot of talk about the NBA scheduling and just the fact that players sometimes have to go on, like, red-eye flights and then play, like, the next night, which has caused, like, I know Steve Kerr has sat, like, certain players during games, and that the NBA has not been super happy about that, because obviously people pay to come see these games, and, you know, if you want to see Steph Curry and he ends up being sat, that's disappointing. But it's also just to be able to keep up with that schedule and to also stay healthy through the off season, especially, or through to the playoffs especially, because, you know, a lot of these teams that have big players are the ones that would be going to the playoffs as well. So they're just trying to maintain player health, but the league makes it difficult to do that sometimes.
Yeah, when I was reading it, I noted down benching players in the NBA as being a similarity, not so much, well, it's similar, not on, like, this level.
Well, I think it's similar, just that the league is not, like, taking any steps to make it so that they wouldn't need to be benched as frequently, because their schedule wouldn't be as, like, grueling on them as athletes. So, I mean, this is obviously, like, with drugs, that's a whole different, whole nother level of, like, disrespect towards players' well-being. But I think they stem from a similar place.
Yeah, and I thought your connection in the article to concussions was also really interesting. And I think, if I had to guess, I feel like the trajectory of, like, this lawsuit about painkillers will probably have a similar outcome in terms of, like, how the NFL dealt with concussions, where they denied it for a long, long time. These practices kept going on, but then eventually there was enough mounting evidence that they kind of had to admit what they had been doing.
Yeah, there is a huge class action lawsuit going on in the NHL right now dealing with concussions, actually, because their commissioner, Gary Bettman, is continuing to say that concussions have nothing to do with CTE, which is, like, what the NFL was denying and has finally been forced to, like, recognize. And the NHL does deal with a lot of really bad brain injuries. And
yeah, CTE, a problem, too, with, like, reasons why ex-players, I guess, die.
For lack of yeah, I mean, word. I hear about NHL players dying, like, every couple of months. Like, a couple of days, on the 7th, so Friday, there was someone overdosed.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. So, like,
that's crazy.
And, like, a lot of it people think is connected to their injuries sustained while playing. Like, CTE causing, like, mental illness.
Yeah, I really like how you ended the the column, too, with your closing graph that professional leagues must take responsibility for players after they leave the sport, and they aren't just cogs in a machine. Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice ending. Moving on to our next lawsuit, Susan.
Hey!
This is all you. Yeah. Do you want to start us off?
So, I guess this is our hot take for the week. We were kind of struggling to come up with a topic, and then this just fell right into our lap. This news broke not that long ago, I think only like 2 hours ago, that the city of St. Louis is suing the NFL and all 32 teams over the Rams' relocation to LA. So, if you don't follow the NFL at all, basically the St. Louis Rams, who have been in St. Louis since...
Yeah, how long? Because they...
1995, I think.
Dang. That's really not that... I thought it was, like, long.
Yeah, so they were in L.A. and then pretty moved. Long. They were the Los Angeles... Well, they were originally the Cleveland Rams.
History.
Yeah, until 45. And then they suspended for a year and then were located to L.A., where they played until the 1994 season and then moved to St. Louis. So they are now... moving, or they just moved back to LA and were in LA for last season. So they were with St. Louis for a total of about 20 years. That's funny, that's actually like the year I was born, so they were there as long as I'm alive.
You've been alive.
So to get back to the lawsuit, the Rams are claiming that the NFL violated its own relocation guidelines and enriched itself at the expense of the community left behind. And in a Bleacher Report article about this, they state that the NFL's guidelines for relocating a franchise include that clubs are obligated to work diligently and in good faith to obtain and maintain suitable stadium facilities and to operate in a manner that maximizes fan support in their current home community. And so basically the argument is that they did not do that and kind of just went for LA because they knew it would produce more revenue for the team. Which is pretty unfair to the fans who have stuck with St. Louis over the years.
Yeah, it's funny. When doing research before we recorded on this topic, the LA Rams owner Stan Kroenke stated in a 2010 St. Louis Post-Dispatch interview that he was going to, quote, attempt to do everything that he can to keep the Rams in St. Louis. He goes on to say that, I've always stepped up for pro football in St. Louis. People in our state know me. People know I can be trusted.
Yes, and in the Bleacher Report article, they state that Kroenke, in the summer of 2013, called the Inglewood, California location, which is where they were slated to build the new stadium, an unbelievable sight. So he clearly, there is some discrepancy there over whether he was really acting in the interest of that fan base. But this also... you know, just brings up a bigger question of teams kind of jumping ship from communities. I know now the Oakland Raiders are trying to move to probably LA, or not LA, sorry, Las Vegas.
That's a thing. It's yeah. official.
Yeah.
They're like officially moving?
Yeah. They officially announced intent to, like, relocate. I don't know.
They were there, and then they, like, keep switching.
Yeah. So I think, and I was talking to you guys about this before, but it's just, it seems like most of the time, these are communities which are of probably lower economic income or, like, socioeconomic status. I know that at least Oakland has still, like, through taxes, are still repaying the renovation of the Coliseum, which is where they currently play, and is not the best facility. And that's fine, but it's also, you know, it just brings this question of now is, like, sports used to be this kind of accessible thing where, you know, you just kind of get yourself a ball and you get yourself a field and you can just play it. But I think because of the increasing inequality in the U.S. especially, it's just becoming more something for, you know, the elites to go to. I mean, mm-hmm. you can see it across any league. Like, as soon as a team does well, like the Warriors, ticket prices are ridiculous. Like, I don't think
you
that
can't
many...
get into a Warriors game.
Yeah, I don't think that many Oakland residents can afford to pay to go see the Warriors, and they might become, you know, like the San Francisco... They're probably moving across the bay, like,
really?
Soon.
They,
I mean, they are.
They're building a new
stadium. They're building a new stadium on the water.
Yeah,
so.
It's going to be right down the street from the Giants stadium.
So they're also kind of moving away from Oakland. And these were, like, these are meaningful teams to that community. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever been to Oakland, but I'm from the Bay Area. And I know that, like, people are very proud of coming from that city.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to see, but they're just kind of taking this away from those people, which doesn't really seem okay.
Yeah, an article stated last year 5 reasons why the Rams will move from St. Louis, and the third reason was St. Louis is too small and too poor, and there's not enough money to attract an NFL team. So look at, I mean, LA, yeah, like there's money, people can go, they can go on vacation, but look at Las Vegas. Like, can you imagine all the suites and all the business owners that can invite people? They won't even watch the game. Like, it'll just be something that they can offer up and go to.
The Golden Knights.
Oh,
Las Vegas is the NHL team.
Oh,
they have one player. They made him play soccer by himself because it's like a pre-game routine, and they made him play by himself because he's the only person assigned to the team.
Oh my gosh,
it's cute.
Yeah, Las Vegas is stepping it up.
Mm-hmm. They're going to be a sports city now.
Yeah. Where are they going to put the stadium? By UNLV? Have you guys been to Vegas?
I think so.
No,
like a very long time ago. Mm-hmm. I don't remember that much.
They already built the stadium, but I don't know where it is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, moving teams. I mean, I know it's a sensitive topic in Seattle just because the Sonics and the issue that has been going around with
trying to... Was that for the same reason, though? Like, was the reason the Sonics left because...
It was because of the stadium.
Greater economic opportunity, like basically.
And the stadium was, like, wasn't up to par, I guess. They got some, like, owners came together and, like, plans were handed over to people and, like, all these specs came out of what, like, the NHL setup would look like. I'll have to show you. Yeah, it's like teams just go to where the money is, I guess.
And obviously, you know, like, I get it. They have to operate off of revenue and things like that. But this is, like, an insanely, like, money-grabbing industry. Like, the sports industry itself has so much money.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the tension we've talked about in every single one of our hot takes. Like, valuing the players and the fan base versus the fact that they are a business and they do need to make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, it's like... clearly not the same thing as the player lawsuit, but they're taking advantage of the fans and not valuing.
But it's interesting just to see, like, contrast, because I mean, my dad is from Portugal. He immigrated here, and I, like, go back every once in them to visit. And last summer when we were there, we went and saw a Champions League game at the Porto Stadium, which was really cool. I encourage anyone to go see a soccer game in Europe because it's an incredible atmosphere. But, I mean, the tickets... they keep the ticket prices to soccer games in Europe pretty low. I'm pretty sure our tickets were only about 40 euros, which is not, like, considering, like, what it would be to go to... And that's a Champions League game, so that's, like, a big deal. But Champions League is, like, kind of like playoffs, sort of, because you have to qualify for it. If that was, like, a knockout, or not a knockout round, that was still in the group round, so it's, like, probably a little less prestigious, but, you know, they just... If you hike up ticket prices there, because, I mean, not to say that the wealth in Portugal is equally distributed at all, because it's not, but because, like, that area, you know, you don't have a lot of people who are these, like, ultra rich, they can't do that, they won't fill the stands, and that's, like, an important part. So it's just interesting to see, like, how other sports in other countries have dealt with this kind of issue.
Yeah, I mean, we keep hearing rumors of the Arizona Coyotes getting moved. Because people in Arizona apparently don't like hockey that much. There's like
it's because of the aesthetic.
Yeah,
because
it's a
desert. Because of the aesthetics.
Like, yeah, the
messes with the
Coyotes
desert aesthetic.
Is that, like, they've been around for, like, I don't know, 20 years now, and currently the best rookie in the NHL is from Arizona, and he plays hockey because he used to go to Coyotes games, and he was really into the Zambonis. But
love,
like,
the Zambonis.
Yeah. And so, like, that's why he started playing hockey, and now he's one of the best hockey players, like, in the world. And so I feel like having teams, talking about moving the team is, like, basically, we're not going to get more players like that. We're not going
to... He's the, like, first Mexican-American to get drafted, right?
No, because Matt Nieto did.
Oh.
Like,
I thought you said something about that.
He was the first overall, but, like, there's really not a lot of Latino players.
Speaking
it's,
of
like,
first
him
overall.
And Matt.
Shout out to Kelsey Plum.
Probably gonna get first pick tonight
in the WNBA draft.
Yeah. Side note, WNBA draft is tonight. Maybe by the time this podcast
is out,
goes live, we'll know where Kelsey Plum
is gonna
be playing.
Up.
But people are saying that she will be the number one pick. So came from UW.
Also,
basically we're all the number one pick. UW.
Can we call this episode See You in Court?
Yes.
Oh, they were talking about it, Josh was talking about it, but apparently Saul Mouching got approached by a rugby team in France.
Yeah, to do a week trial. He saw him posted something about it on his Twitter. Yeah,
so
pretty interesting
pretty cool.
That he left football to pursue Rugby.
I think that was always... I know he's a native Pacific Islander, and mm-hmm. he is, like, really attached to his culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that rugby in the Pacific Island region is a bigger sport, bigger deal.
Yeah, there's a feature on him, something about, like, it was his first love or something cute like that.
It says he thought football was a girly sport. Which is super funny.
I mean, he's not wrong. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Play Like a Girl. You can join the conversation on Twitter using the hashtag UWPLAG. Everything is caps except for the A. Haley's column comes out every Tuesday, so check that on the daily website, which is dailyuw.com. And then if you're interested in getting the updates on UW Sports, you can follow the sports Twitter at UW Daily Sports. And all of our Twitter handles will be in the description below, so you can follow each one of us if you would like as well.
Yeah. I want to see one new follower on my Twitter.
I mean, like, I have a Gretzky number of followers right now, but, like...
I mean, I don't want to brag, but Digital Trends just followed me on Twitter.
Mm.